I've never seen such a close election. Never seen such a personal animosity between two candidates.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, The Choice. The presidential election is almost here, and it features a familiar face who's already held the office against a trailblazer many Americans are still learning about. A new PBS Frontline documentary is the latest in an election year series focused on the candidates that dates back to 1988. The Choice, Harris versus Trump, traces the rise of former President Donald Trump to the White House and his current legal troubles, and Harris, who's only headed the ticket since July.
I know Donald Trump's type.
She seems to be perfectly positioned for this moment.
He's simply being what he's always been. He's always believed that what the rest of the world sees as a loss can be marketed as a win.
This election was a total fraud. And they did these massive dumps of votes, and all of a sudden I went from winning by a lot to losing by a little.
Well, joining us now is filmmaker Michael Kirk. Welcome back.
It's great to be back, Ian. Thank you.
So does this election feel different to you?
Unbelievably so. I've never seen such a close election, never seen such a personal animosity between two candidates. The way the candidate Harris landed on the ticket, the Biden jumping out of the race a couple of months ago now. Just all of it, the chaos of all of it, the assassination attempt on Trump. If you're a filmmaker and your job is to tell this story every 4 years, you have a fairly, and we've been doing it since the late 80s, you have a fairly good frame of reference, but this is astonishing to see happen right before our eyes and our lenses from our cameras.
How much sort of recutting and scrambling did you have to do when Biden was replaced by Harris? Because for a while, this looked like a rematch.
It was a rematch, and it was a kind of moribund rematch in lots of ways. We'd made this film in 16, so we knew Trump from 16, and then 20, we knew him again. We knew Biden from 20, and then we had a choice coming that was both of them familiar candidates to us as filmmakers and to the American people. When Biden dropped out in the middle of the summer, we had to pick up with a new candidate who there's never been a major documentary made about her. There was not really a definitive biography made about her. Hardly anybody in the archive houses had any old footage of her. And we had about 2 months to get it together. But, you know, we did it. And it's a fascinating story and part and parcel of just kind of the crazy chaos surrounding this particular election from our perspective.
So for people who haven't seen the film yet, and I would recommend it, it's a great way to get up to speed, obviously, if you haven't paid attention every single day like some of us degenerates have. But how did Harris get to this point? I mean, you know, people know she's the vice president, but she had a long and kind of winding road to get there.
She's the child of a mother who was a Brahmin, raised in the Brahmin caste in India, angry at her family and her family angry at her. She, by herself, came to America at 19, became a cancer researcher at the University of California at Berkeley, met a man from Jamaica, a black man from Jamaica. They had a couple of kids, Kamala and Maya. Shamala, the mother, and Donald, the father, divorce. Kamala is seven, and they live in Berkeley, on the flats of Berkeley, in a sort of working class house and neighborhood. Her mother makes a determination, even though they're mixed race, her daughter's skin is dark enough that she decides they're going to be recognized as black people in America, so they need to live in a black environment. She makes that happen. The mom is a big social justice warrior and infuses that in her daughters. And we watch her story. We watch Kamala grow in that environment, protesting mother, single mom, Berkeley, California, which a lot of people called Berserkly, California at the time, the Panthers all around, the trials of the, as the American government was, you know, going after them, the free speech things, the anti-Vietnam War protests. So she was steeped in all of that at the, from the very beginning. And throughout her life, she has faced the decision, do I fight from the outside? She's determined to fight. She's been taught to fight. Do I fight from the outside or from the inside? And she makes a decision, as people will see in the film, to become a prosecutor of all things, as an attorney. Her mother is shocked. Her family is amazed that she's going to join the man in law enforcement. Fascinating twist, and many, many more like that in her life.
Yeah, I was glad you stopped there, because I want to ask you about that reputation. You know, she has pitched herself throughout her career as a reformer in these institutions. But in this election specifically, she's also said, hey, I'm the law and order candidate. You know, I used to go against felons like Donald Trump is now. What's the truth about how she approached her role as, you know, both DA and then AG?
In the very beginning, there's a section in our film. By the way, the film is a weave of the two lives. So every 6 minutes or so, it changes to the other person.
Not the Donald Trump weave, a different weave.
That's a different weave for Trump. But at the same time, you get in your head what's happening with him and what's happening with her. So by the time she comes around to being a district attorney, running for district attorney, she wins. 4 months into the job, there's a murder of a police officer. It rarely happens in San Francisco. The community, the law enforcement community, everybody are up in arms, and they want to impose the death penalty on the shooter. But Harris has promised in her campaign that she will not ever seek the death penalty, that she has a strong position on it. The police department, the mayor, the most famous and powerful United States senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, at the funeral for the police officer, you know, kind of spanks Harris and says, you know, this is a death penalty case if ever I saw one. And the place erupts, police officers and others applauding. And there's Harris sitting there as the new district attorney, and the cops start to shun her. She can't get anywhere with law enforcement, and she stands by her position, but it's a tough road. And she, people tell us, she learns a lesson from it, and that is not to get out there in front of major controversial issues publicly. If you want to get involved on the edges, work your way in, see what's happening. But and also shore up a popular side of yourself. And she stays with law enforcement and starts to support them pretty dramatically after this is over. And you do see her evolve through that process and get very wary about kind of controversial topics and stay in kind of close to the center as close as she can, and really supporting law enforcement in ways that are what a normal district attorney would do. There are massive, by the way, changes inside the institution that she institutes, but they are subtle, more women in the workforce, and things like that. So it's a fascinating moment in her development.
I thought it was telling too in the film that just a linguistic thing, they changed the definition of you know, a young prostitute to a less kind of loaded phrase in her office, and that kind of gives you an idea about how she looks at things.
Well, she made young prostitutes, she made the charging officers in the district attorney's office not call them perpetrators, but to go after the perpetrators who were preying upon young women. So suddenly young women are not prostitutes, you know, teenage prostitutes anymore. They are in a victim class. And that is a phenomenal change in terms of the way crimes are, those kind of crimes are charged in San Francisco.
Let's talk about Trump for a moment. I mean, as you say, he's not new to this program, and his life has been looked at a lot in the past decade. So I think it was Roger Stone in the film makes the point that, you know, 2016, Trump was more or less playing with house money. You know, he ran. No one thought he could win. He took everybody by surprise, and he just kept on going all the way to the White House. But the stakes are really different for him this time around, you know, both in terms of reputationally, but also in terms of his potential freedom after the election. So what do you think is on the line for Trump in this, his third run for the White House?
Well, I think he's been, one person in the film says, when he went, when he lost to Biden, he went back to his home, Mar-a-Lago in Florida. They called it Elba, like Napoleon going off to get himself ready to go out and do battle again. I think it's a vindication moment for Trump. That's for sure. He's hoping for vindication. He's been taught, as people will see in the film, by his father. It was drummed into him. You can't be a loser. There are only winners. And if you're not a winner, you're a loser. And that's a terrible thing. So it sort of explains why Trump couldn't live with the results of the last election. He's also, while he's there, there's another reason people tell us for his vehemence and his strong desire to win, other than revenge and vindication. It is that the potential really exists, given 34 counts of, you know, fraud and all the things that have been raised, sexual assault, losing that civil case, other things. There's somebody in the film says, if you add up, if he's guilty of all of the things he's being charged with, he's liable for 700 years of accumulated time in prison. That is and that will all go away, they say, if he's elected president. So it's another motivation for Donald Trump to win. And of course, he says all of these prosecutions are persecutions, and it will be his moral obligation and right, if he wins, to push them all away in a legal sense and stop the persecution of Donald Trump by a variety of law enforcement and legal groups.
You know, how do you be fair in a project like this? I think it's fair to say that Harris is, she's the first woman vice president. She's a multiracial figure. You know, she's a unique candidate, but she's also, as a politician, a fairly standard type of figure that we're used to in our politics, where the other person is unlike anybody we've ever had in America. You know, impeached twice, all the legal troubles, lying almost constantly. And yet this is still a binary choice for voters. As a filmmaker, how do you approach that dichotomy?
You can't think about it that way, in a way. You have to think about it as, you know, because it's a weave, and because you want it to feel fair in terms of, just in the roughest way, in terms of the amount of time you devote to each candidate, and there the time is almost to the seconds equal across the 2 hours. And then your job is to try to identify the critical 10 moments in their lives, and then be as fair as you can be. And these are moments that lead the viewer to understand that there's a phrase I always use, a president can bring to the job no more than the lessons of his life or her life. In this case, a president can bring to the job no more than the lessons of his or her own life. So that's what the film is about. It's not about policy or anything else. So it is asking, in 10 different scenes, what parts of what they've acquired as a life method emerge. And all of this is designed to be predictive, so that you can understand how she might act, how he might act in future encounters as a president of the United States, future things that have to happen, all of it in the midst of a chaotic and divisive election. So how do you do it? You tell the very clearest story you can that informs that decision about what is their life method? What have they learned to do? What are they operating on? Well, this is without getting in their heads. This is just what has actually happened. And I think if you do that and you do it fairly, yes, many of the things in the Trump scenes are tough. We made every scene with the recognition that 70 million people voted for him last time. And he has even now in the face of everything that's happening, such a following. What's that about and how is he responding to it? That's just critical to our job of laying it out, including warts and all with Donald Trump and warts and all with Kamala Harris. She's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. So it's our job to be fair. It's our job to be accurate. I don't know. I never think about objective. I don't know what that really means, but I think it is the film. I hope by showing just exactly as close to who they really are as you can, has a kind of interesting, I won't even say balance, it's just an interesting and fair feeling, I hope, as a revelation of what they have actually done and where they actually came from.
Just one more thing. You know, so much of this election is about how media is sort of refracted into the end user. And a lot of us are now getting separate streams of information, or we're getting information that is helpful to our tribe versus a different tribe. And it just occurs to me that, you know, what you're doing is old fashioned in the best kind of way. If somebody wants to have an informed choice, all of this is laid out. They can watch this film as you've made every 4 years and decide for themselves, you know, and it's not a partisan exercise, and it's not a cheerleading exercise. Does what you do feel a little like, I don't know, out of step with where media is right now? And I should say, I'm very grateful that you do it.
My answer to your question, Ian, was I hope we're out of step with media today. I mean, I've been doing this for decades, and I am frequently appalled at what passes for coverage. Angry about it. I can see why Americans who don't know what goes into how this particular sausage is being made could be very, very upset, especially if you feel as strongly about your side, your team, your red or blue team, as it seems most Americans do now. We're so divided, and we're so being fed by, as you suggest, Ian, our algorithms and our opinions and our biases and our prejudices are being discovered by big media and reflected by what you receive. I'm not saying all journalism is horrible. I'm just saying that there are so many different ways you're getting information that it may be that journalism is getting serious journalism, and there is serious journalism being practiced in America. I like to think that's us too. But it's all being refracted, bounced off of, you know, invaded by garbage from lots of places, including some big media.
Well, keep doing what you're doing, Michael. The name of the new film from PBS Frontline is The Choice 2024, Harris versus Trump. And that is The Choice. So if you haven't seen it yet, it's available now. And time is ticking before November 5th. Michael, always great to talk to you. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.